without further ado, for those that haven't been formally introduced, why don't you give yourself a warm introduction?
It's not often you get to introduce yourself warmly or otherwise. So happy to. Look, my name's Kieran. I live in Ireland. I've been in the business technology space for about 30 years, thus aging myself immediately, Mark. But I've been there, done that, seen that. There's very few technologies I haven't come across over the years, but it's always fascinating to watch them appear and disappear. I'm passionate about education. I'm an ex-teacher, believe it or not, from many years ago. Not many people know that. And then I've spent decades as a developer, as a consultant, as a head of data science and process excellence, as a leader of intelligent automation. I'm fascinated by what technology can do for business. Can't imagine being in any other space. Imagine doing something that didn't change every day. My goodness, we would be bored. But I'm not excited for technology's sake. I'm excited by what technology can do in the world. And by goodness, the technologies that we can have today can allow businesses and society and governments and everyone else in between to do amazing things. So I wake up every single day with a smile on my face, knowing that I'm going to see and learn, do something different every single day. And Mark, long may that continue.
Kieran, I appreciate you, and I'm excited to dig into all of these things that you've learned over the years. Reading a little soundbite from one of your YouTube videos, in 2000, you built a robot. Tell me a bit about that, because that was pre-RPA. What'd you build?
Yeah, it's funny now, isn't it? The multi-billion pound industry that it's become, having been packaged beautifully, existed for years before. Maybe not in the same guise, but if you want to call it screen scraping, robots, customer relationship management with workflow built into their case management workflow, all these things created decades ago. I suppose the one thing, Mark, people have hired me for over the years is my foresight. And in 2000, people weren't even talking about robots, which is slightly odd for me back in the day. But I created Solly the Robot. I was working for a legal firm in Ireland. And what you would see in the law firm was that there was a lot of things that are the same. I know if you talk to a lawyer, they might talk about how they handcraft the law, how their brain comes into so many things, and genuinely does. And if you ever get an opportunity to hire a great lawyer, a great accountant, a great tax person, those things you need for your business. But the number of things that were the same were phenomenal when you broke the process down. So when you're purchasing a property or remortgaging a property, someone needs to give you instructions. Once you've got instructions, there's obvious next steps. Once you've passed those next steps, there's a contract stage. Once you've done the contract stage, there's a signing and a whatever mortgage stage, all the same. So I created a robot that basically, as soon as you started putting stuff into the case management system, the robot started to assist or augment, even back in the day, which is now, what, 24 years ago. So the moment you did something, the robot went, I know what you want next. It went away, did a whole load of the work for you. That meant as a legal professional, you weren't dealing with the necessary but very mundane steps in the process. The robot or the digital workflow was taking care of all of this. And if you look at some of the things we were doing back in the day, it was quite innovative. So the moment you signed up to the law firm, we sent you a bill, we sent an email telling you where you were at with your case. You could log in online, you could interact with the robot, you could interact bilingually or multilingually on the website. The robot would send emails updating you throughout the progress of the case. What it would do is also collect the information on all of the work that you were doing. So when you as a lawyer or paralegal or legal professional came in the next morning, it had prepared your entire workload for the day. And if you were off and something didn't happen, so that things didn't get stuck in the process, it alerted your supervisor or your manager. But the really interesting bit on top of that, which started part of my career, was the analytics piece. All of a sudden, not only could you see the automation freeing lawyers to spend more time with customers or to do more work, essentially, for higher productivity, you also seen a lot of data analytics coming out because the robot could start to go through numbers of cases per day, numbers of transactions, particular stages, how long lawyers or legal professionals were taking to do things. And it wasn't to catch them out. It was very much to give them the analytics so the business could see the number of staff, the amount of workflow, the times to take things done, who was better and who was worse at something, so it could provide training to start to create a high performance environment. And that business grew from, I think when I started, it was about 20 people. It grew to over 200 and something people, which isn't very big internationally, But from a law firm perspective, in the jurisdiction that it was in, it was the biggest law firm by none within a very short period of time, which shows you adopting the right technology with the right professional allows you to do far more than just a professional being there by themselves.
For sure. And a lot of unique kind of qualities to that particular situation. I feel like the business owner themselves has to be somewhat forward thinking to agree to make these changes.
They absolutely do. It's the horrible, ugly truth, Mark, of why businesses don't transform is down to the word people. If you want to change, you can change. We've had all the technology in the world for decades. Yes, maybe it's not as good as it is now, but we've had all the technology we have needed to digitally transform for 3 or 4 different decades. I was fortunate to work for a business leader who absolutely adored the impact that technology could have. He also recognized, he happened to be he, that it wasn't just about the technology, but if you give great people great technology, you can do even greater things. But I do remember I pretty much had a blank check because everything that I was doing, I made sure there was a business case put around it. There was an outcome. It was focused on delivering what the strategy was. Too many IT projects I have seen are vanity projects. In other words, it's very interesting for the IT professional to do it, but it does nothing for the business. So I had to build that element of trust in with the business leader to show that everything we were doing worked. And then there was a heck of a lot of other work done outside of IT around the promotion, around the selling, around the education, around the training. I call it a massive change management plan to get people into the mindset that we weren't replacing them with robots, but actually we were augmenting them to allow them to achieve more and bill more, which ultimately resulted in more money for the lawyer, but to deliver happier, better quality service for all the clients, which oddly enough resulted in less work for all the lawyers in the law firm because clients weren't complaining. I remember in the bottom of an email, I was looking for X amount of pounds. And I also wrote, and I'd like $1 million in a brown bag for a bit of fun as well, to which I got, absolutely, you can have everything apart from the brown bag and the $1 million, but thanks for trying. So I was trusted, but maybe not up to a point.
Amazing.
It was lovely to get a blank check. That you can do amazing things with, but you have to earn that.
Oh, I got to put it out there. Blank checks. Love it. Tell me, with the year, we're right in the beginning now. What are you excited about?
As I said a little bit earlier on, Mark, I have watched technology over the years. So I've been through the year 2000, 3 or 4 different recessions, through ERP, through RPA and intelligent automation, through cloud, you name it, I've been there. As I said, I worked as a data science, head of data science for 13 years. But the one thing that excites me continues to be data analytics, which I started back in the day when I started my IT career in the 90s. I've been fascinated by data, fascinated by what people can do with the data in terms of decision insight to allow them to make far better decisions. Now, on top of that, boy, am I excited about generative AI. And it's not from the everybody's talking about a point of view and therefore jumping on the bandwagon point of view. I had seen ChatGPT and a couple of others because you follow Google, you follow the trends, you follow their research groups before November last year. And you were starting to go, oh my goodness, that's just phenomenal. You'll remember back in the day you were designing narrow AI. So in other words, we were doing retention models. And I could tell you for most people in Northern Ireland, what they were, if they were going to sign up to this insurance policy or not and how much I need to charge them. It was very narrow. You had one case study, you put engineers near, you built databases and data warehouses, you had data scientists and data engineers wrangling everything. Now, all of a sudden, I can ask a large language model 1,000 different questions. And over time, if I train that, I can get it to give 1,000 different answers. I've played with this technology and used this technology for 12 months. At a minimum, I am 30 to 40% more productive. And I've not spent as many hours as I want. I have to work as well. But it is truly exciting, the power of analytics plus LLMs plus automation. So what am I excited about in 2024? It's businesses actually turning what is currently potential into value. I think we'll see a mass of companies, or we should see a mass of companies giving their employees the training, the awareness, the business use cases, the skill and the access to generative technology to allow them to do far more and ethically as well, but to do and achieve far more in far less time, far more easily than in the past. everybody will have AI in their pocket for $20 or even less. That's going to transform how we actually do things. It's going to enrich the decisions that we make. It's going to improve the businesses that we're actually operating today. And I can't wait to see that turn into fruition. Once people start to use technology in a massively transformative way, I think we'll actually start people going, remember that automation thing that we talked about and those robots that we've resisted and everything else that we can do to automate the life out of our jobs? Maybe we should relook at that again. So I'm excited about the combination of generative AI, AI, decision insight, and intelligent automation to allow us to really create the exponential firms that we should have created over the last decade.
Wow, lots to be excited about there. I can sense the genuine enthusiasm for what you do. Let's talk about let's maybe start with ChatGPT. You've been using it for 12 months. What's been the story arc for you, both from a usage perspective and how your thoughts about the tool have changed?
Yeah, the real story arc is the last time I used Google to search was maybe November 2022. That's scary, exciting, fascinating. If I'm Google, I'm terrified. What's their business model built on? The same with YouTube or whatever else. So it's fascinating that I don't use search engines anymore and haven't. And why I haven't is because of the power of the tools. So not only do I use ChatGPT, I have a range of tools open at the same time. Again, folks, please go and pick the tool that's right from you. But I've Claude, I've Grammarly, I've ChatGPT, I've image creators, Bing image creator up. The amount of things that I can do and create in my day-to-day work is phenomenal. So for example, one of the things I do for a lot of people is write technology-related content. Now, before I begin, instead of doing vast amounts of research, I go and put in the structure of what I want. I put in the audience. I put in a whole host of prompts and go, this is the kind of thing that I'm looking for. Now, it's not replacing what I do. That would be rather lazy and it would be wonderful and rather easy if I could say, write me a 3,000 word white paper on the latest Intel MX processor. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately. But by goodness, does it give you a leg up in terms of the things that you need? So I'll go into ChatGPT, Bing, Google, Bard, Claude. Each of them give you a slightly different answer, despite the fact that you maybe use the same prompt or adjust it. But all of a sudden, it catapults me forward in terms of the ideas and the content and the findings and the combination of the findings that it's just not been possible. To date, I do a search engine. It comes up with 10 things. I then have to go into each and everything and make sense of them. Now I can get the engine to do that. When I start writing, and I'm using this as one example only, I get it to do a grammar check and do an audit of everything that I've written back. It comes with answers. I can then get it to restructure it and rewrite it in a better way that's more receptive to my audience. So I might say, act as a Gartner blower analyst. Here's the audience that you're actually going to. I want you to pitch it at this level. Would you rephrase that so it's got more impact? Out the back of that, I'm doing active and passive, change the sentences around, the grammar, the structure. At top of that, I'll go, this is now going to be in a social media article. Can you write me a prompt that's intuitive, interesting, stops everybody scrolling? Can you now create an image that goes with this article? And so on and so on. The number of uses that I put it to every day are phenomenal. It's like having, and it's a terrible phrase that people repeat, it is like having an army of very clever and increasingly clever interns beside me or executive assistants who are really capable in so many different areas undertaking the work that I'm doing. As I said, it's not replaced me. It could maybe at some stage, and I don't mind that, by the way, because it allows me to evolve in other areas. But by goodness, has it allowed me to accelerate not only what I'm doing, but the quality of what I'm doing and the ideas and the thinking behind what I'm actually at in ways that I just couldn't have possibly imagined. Now, before I do anything, I'm almost reaching to generative AI in the first instance to get the thinking and the thoughts and the structure and more ideas and counter arguments and counterintuitive ideas as well, because I can challenge it to prompt what I'm actually doing. So now that I've done that, I know it really, and I actually go out and train companies how to do it. And every time I do it, it's like presenting magic to people where they're going, my goodness, I'm doing an interview for a particular role. I didn't know what to ask the questions based on a particular methodology. And I didn't agree this with the other people in the room. Now I basically feed in the job advert, ask it to produce all the questions that I need, an example of 10, following a particular interview methodology, explain to me why you've done it. And all of a sudden it goes and does it in 2 minutes. You can have 20 questions, pick your top 10, work with the person in front of you, and off you go. Those are just small examples of the wide variety of things. As a friend of mine said, if you can think it and you can describe it, ChatGPT or generative AI can probably create it. So the only thing that's now limited is our imagination. So why am I excited about all these technologies, things that it can do? It's just a bottomless, wonderful pit of huge potential and huge opportunity to allow me to do the most amazing things far better, far more productively, to higher quality than I've ever been able to do to date. And the exciting bit is all these models are getting better and better. And thankfully, I'm getting better and better at asking questions as well. It's exciting times.
I share a similar enthusiasm. It's so cool what can be done. And I feel like there's this idea of AI is really, if you look at it the right way, the art of intelligence. How you look at connecting everything with a powerful input. So I'm very interested in that connective tissue, putting together a string of tools that I love this idea of the second brain. And I've started to apply some of these ideas of using Notion as a repository for a whole bunch of data. And recently started to play around with Notion AI and being able to get really high quality output right inside formatted, usable databases. So it's incredibly fascinating. And I'm curious, from how do you now think about ChatGPT? What is your, we've got all these different tools. How do you think about it?
Yeah, look, I suppose just to build on a phrase you said a moment ago, because it's exciting times. I coined the phrase a little while ago. We're not talking about a return on investment, despite the fact that we do need to invest in this technology and training. And we probably have to restructure how we go about things inside of organizations and everything else. But we're really talking about a return on intelligence that we can accelerate or multiply far greater than we currently have. So now, for example, on a normal day, I can get X done with ChatGPT or one of the other derivatives. I can be 10X in certain instances more productive. And in certain instances, I can be 20 and 40 and almost 100X more productive in general. And the quality of my outputs can be greater. So I go back to the example where I'm writing a white paper, I'm presenting an argument. But to make sure that my argument's solid, I'll go in and ask ChatGPT or Bing or Bard or whatever, Gemini, give me the counterintuitive argument as to why this may not be as good a quality statement as it might be. So all of a sudden I'm getting challenged and checked, and my thinking is getting judged against what is currently really great quality LLMs. Now, if you imagine that's going to improve as these things improve over time as well, then the quality of the output should be greater. So I'm excited by the potential return on intelligence of the tools themselves. And the more I invest in the tools, and as you were mentioning, I now have template prompts, template documents that I feed in, template white papers to saying this is the quality and the standard, and this is the style that I want you to get it to. Because remember, in the real world, we've got a brilliant assistant. We're giving them all this information. Here's prior examples. This is the outcome that I want you to put in place. We can't just say to the computer, do a white paper on X. So the more intelligence we put into the tooling in general, the manufacturers, the more intelligence we put in as individuals to train it in specific ways that we want in our style and our methods, the greater the return on intelligence we're going to get. So 2 + 2 = 7. Now, once everybody understands 2 + 2 = 7, then imagine you've 100 people inside of your organization producing 100 times X. Now you have 100 times X times a multiplier, and the opportunities now to achieve even greater things are just going to be vast. That's why I call it the generative or the exponential organization. But it's the combination, I think, Mark, not of just one technology, because AI has been around for decades. Generative AI, as I coined it in the talk I was doing recently, is an 85-year-old success story. But when you start to combine generative AI with normal AI, and sometimes normal AI and machine learning is absolutely fine, and that's what you want. When you combine it with other exponential technologies like blockchain, like AR, like VR, like intelligent automation, robotic process automation, the combination of the technologies are going to give us arms and legs and second and third and fourth brains that allow us to run far faster to far higher quality than we can ever imagine. The challenge is going to be trying to keep up with it all. And therefore, as we move into this age of AI, and as everybody who's now coming out of work suddenly becomes not a digital native, but an AI native, and as soon as everybody is AI in their pocket, in much the same way as the mobile phone transformed everything that we're now doing, when everybody is AI in their pocket, my goodness, are we going to be able to do amazing things once they learn how to use it? You and I are probably slightly ahead of the curve because we're excited by technology. We mix in this space, and now with 12 months expertise, you will have reached a marathon ahead of a lot of people. But very quickly, organizations are going to see the power of this technology. They're not going to be able to avoid it, because if you think everybody is using AI, they probably are. And if you're not using it, you're probably one of the few not thinking about it at the moment. And that's a very dangerous situation to be in, because we're also not in an age of exponential technology or an age of AI. We're also in the digital Darwinism age, or the AI and digital Darwinism age, where if businesses do not invest in these technologies, then, and I don't wish this in any of them, I don't fancy their chances of being around in the next 5 years' time.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you that if businesses aren't incorporating AI and have a path to where is the learning stages for the teams, for the leadership, on the agenda for the year, right? These need to be regular checkpoints. I think the continuous learning organization has to be something that for an organization to succeed. I understand as a solopreneur, there's different opportunities because you're not tethered by what your job description is. And depending on the organization, there's certain security rules and things that are in place for obvious reasons. How often do we start to use something in our personal lives and realize it's amazing because somebody showed it to us and then bring that to work? It needs to be a forward-thinking leadership regardless of the organization, and there needs to be time on the tool. But you increase that, you start to connect the dots. And there's, even today, there are regularly things that I just throw at ChatGPT and discover something new just to see what it can do. I realize that it's quite a handy PDF splitter and combiner. And that's just a very slight use case that, handy to know, right? But you don't really get these kinds of experiences unless you spend a lot of time with the instrument, right? For you to become an exceptional guitar player as a leader for your band, you got to spend the time practicing. And I agree with you that I haven't used Google in a long time. And if you are still using Google as a leader in an organization, I would really assess, are you researching enough what ChatGPT specifically can do? What is your recommendation for people in business that are new to ChatGPT and how to get your feet wet? Where to begin?
Yeah, well, like you've said it a second ago, do you know what I mean? You just need to put the tool on your desktop and be conscious that, like, everything comes with risks. So the very first one with ChatGPT, and again, this is open to other tools as well, folks, we should say this, is that if you do not hit a particular box or option, then any data you feed into ChatGPT can become part of the overall training corpus. And as Samsung discovered not that long ago, when they were one of a number of companies that fed in their IP, all of a sudden you may run the risk of actually giving up a lot of very valuable content. And in this day and age, when most things can be bought and copied, I can launch a business in China tomorrow in the cloud, whereas two decades ago, I would have needed someone in the local market, I would have needed a factory, I would have needed machinery. Or I can now do anything I want. The real differentiator becomes the skill of the people, the will of the leadership, the technology and how you combine them together, but most importantly, the data that you've got, your processes. So we do warn people, just be careful putting things securely into place. We do also warn people around the ethics of this. And when people talk about ethics, it can sound really boring in the governance bit, but it's not. There literally has been too many examples over the past where AI has been trained by a particular cohort to recognize everything that cohort does is wonderful and great. Guess what? It's not. It's not very diverse and it's not very even. And statistically speaking, diverse teams produce better results. All that said, get the tool. dip your toe in the water, get it to do simple things. As you're mentioning, split a PDF, get it to come up with a counter argument to something you're saying. You're organizing a training event in your business, ask it to come up with some suggestions. You want some questions of a very publicly available interview form or job advertisement, put it in and ask it for 10 questions saying you want to follow a particular interview methodology and tell it what you want it to do. Think of all the roles in your organization and look at some of the tasks that they perform and ask ChatGPT or Bing or Bard or Gemini or whatever else it is for answers or checks or challenges or updates or restructures or rewrites of emails. But to your point, get your feet wet. You made a really great point as well, Mark, here that I think very often people miss. This technology, AI, is too important to throw to your IT team in the corner and then come back in 2 years' time. As an executive and chair and board, there should be continued education around the art of technology, but AI in particular, because it is truly amazing. They should learn, they should evidence it. This is too much of a change, too much of an investment, too much of a restructure in a business to hand it any way down from beneath the C-suite. The C-suite should have an owner on this. And to your point, they should have been playing with it. There's nothing worse than you and I have probably been in businesses where leaders sitting up there talking a whole load of bumpkin about a technology that they've not used or not willing to use, and then are trying to convince the world beneath them that this is the greatest thing since sliced bread in a very bad way. And everybody listens and goes, you don't believe in this. I'm off. This technology is too transformative. Leaders have to understand it. They have to believe in it. They have to provide some guidelines to get it done. And they have to provide the training and the models and everything else, and the awareness and risks and everything else to let people experiment whilst their IT teams and the risk teams work out what it is that people can or cannot do. But even there, I would caution one thing. During COVID, and you mentioned COVID a while ago, the world transformed. Everybody learned what they should have learned decades ago, that you can work from anywhere, assuming there's trust, because there's been laptops for decades, there's been broadband and leased lines for decades, antivirus, you name it, everything has existed. COVID created a platform that forced people to react and to work together. And all of a sudden, things that were blocked in the past that IT teams said they couldn't do, all of a sudden magically disappeared overnight. So if organizations want to roll this technology out, apply the learning that they learned during COVID, that if you want to make it happen, you can make it happen. There are risks, but there's risks to crossing the road. But this technology is too important and too competitively advantageous to spend the next 9 months working out a policy or putting it at the top of your pile. So what I would encourage people to do is learn it, give them the skills, give them the direction and training. Put this as the number one project inside of a business and do what you did during COVID, which is remove every barrier, focus really quickly, get this working. Because if you haven't got it working the next 6 months, I just think you will not be 6 months behind, but you'll be 18 months behind a lot of your competitors.
Yes, to your point, add it to the agenda and move it to priority number one. And that's seeing what it can do. That's part of me starting OpenAI training, is because the writing is on the wall. I spent time running a PR business, and the majority of my time was spent training my team on AI. Because I knew that any amount of time put into that, they were going to be exponentially better independently at getting all the things that they need to get done. And I just feel there's, in thinking about helping my friends, I'm like, guys, girls, you need to know some of these things. And I've got a Stream Deck beside me, and I've just been starting to connect all these shortcuts and applications with click triggers. So I'm loading it up with GPTs to give myself push button triggers to get to access these tools. So speaking about process, a lot of it now is deciding what processes can be eliminated, right? And that's, do we even need to be doing these things? After you set up an automation, you've had a lot of experience with process design. How should organizations think about approaching process and ChatGPT or a generative AI?
Really great question. So let me combine that with generative AI plus intelligent automation.
Okay.
What a lot of people do is they do it wrong. hence why a lot of projects have failed in the past, where they go out to the business and say, what do you not like doing? And we'll automate that. And what happens is people come up with all sorts of suggestions of stuff that's relatively boring to do and very low value. They spend a lot of money automating that and don't actually see a return in their investment. Mine is not to start at the bottom in the weeds. Mine is to be a little bit more fundamental and transformative, which is I'm going out to the market and I'm understanding what is it that my customers want, what are they willing to pay money for, and pay a premium over cost to such an extent that it makes it worthwhile for me to have a business, fund the business, hire people, create a product or service that people are going to enjoy and pay me money for, not just next week, next month, but next year. So I'm looking in the organization going, what are the big decisions we need to make to allow us to be the best organization possible? What are the key functions and processes that need to operate in the most efficient, frictionless manner that delights and excites both our customers and our employees to deliver this product at the highest quality as appropriate and the lowest cost as appropriate to allow me to maximize the value of my organizational investment? So now that I know what we're deciding to do and how we're going to do it, then I'm eliminating everything else that exists in the organization that I possibly can that does not contribute to the big prize. Now, that said, there are some things that you and I know need to happen. If we have to do email every day, I can't eliminate email. But if you ever go through an organization that's in financial distress, and I've had to restructure a number of them, all of a sudden you go looking for things that don't add value, and lots of projects suddenly are suggested. IT projects that were really interesting, but actually do they turn the dial on the big number? And the answer is no. Lots of marketing spend, training spend, or side projects, or invoices, or recurring direct debits, or the purchasing of something that's been going on, but nobody's looked at it. Or what is there's processes in place that someone put in 2 years ago, but nobody's had a time to examine. And I am slashing those. So I'm looking at the big decisions. I'm looking at the big processes. I'm taking away everything else that doesn't turn the dial for those, because that allows me to free funds, free people, and free time to work on those big, high value add items. Then what I'm doing is I'm looking down those processes and not automating and digitizing them and putting generative AI in to help me decide and to do just for the sake of doing that. As you and I know in business, and let's take the example, Mark, of car insurance. If I've got a claim, the last thing I want to do when I'm sitting on the side of the road is talk to a chatbot that says, please repeat the question, I don't understand it. There are certain moments when intelligent automation and generative AI make sense, and there are certain KMOTs, key moments of truth, where people make sense. So as I'm redesigning and restructuring the process to maximize the value, remember I mentioned a moment ago about the customer and the employee experience. I'm making sure that when people can add their highest and best value and emotional support and judgment and decision-making, creativity and innovation, that is absolutely protected from automation, but is augmented by it. When I say from, you're not replacing a good human answering a question to a distressed client by a robot. You're augmenting them with great technology. So during that claims process, for example, I might have an app. I ask the person on the side of the road to point at the car, take a video of all the surrounding, and all of a sudden the AI works out where they are, contacts the breakdown company and gets a vehicle coming out, assesses the damage, gets the vehicle insurer notified as the potential loss, starts the initial process so that I can spend all this time being empathetic and answering all the customers' questions as all of this magic work is happening in the background. So big thinking goes to big decisions, big process flows, working out end-to-end process flows, the key moments of truth where we need people and the key moments of truth where we need them augmented and the things that we can digitize and automate. And I'm working down from that big picture vision. That way there, I can get maximum value, maximum employee and customer experience, whereas working from your bottom up, automating or using generative AI on the bits and pieces will result in a bits and pieces return. And that's not what we're looking for. And it's certainly not what that technology can deliver today.
It's an excellent point. The only way to achieve anything is to go after the goal, right? So as long as that's front and center and you reverse engineer how to get there, then things that don't need to be automated fall off because they're not serving the final outcome. So excellent, excellent example too. I can imagine how that AI would work with filming the location, and incredible, right? So what have been some aha moments this year for you working with technology? That's really interesting.
It always surprises me, Mark. There isn't a time when if you get a really great technology that you can't do something with it. So let's work through a couple. Generative AI, let me not repeat that. That's just been as exciting as hell. Suddenly seeing very narrow AI that has been able to allow companies to achieve amazing things over the last numbers of decades, suddenly turn into something that's now democratized, that's now capable of working across so many different industries and verticals and tasks at next to no marginal cost. That is massively exciting. I have to say, some of the other stuff that I've seen is what I would describe as older technology. But you remember, technology goes through hype curves. So all of a sudden, everybody says AR and VR is the greatest thing that ever existed on this planet. And all of a sudden, you see a pile of cash going into it, and all of the promises that were made to sell it don't suddenly go through because it's thrown at things that it shouldn't be thrown at. So all of a sudden, AR and VR at the start of 2023 were getting a kicking, not really exciting anymore. And I remember being at the Web conference in November in Lisbon in 2022, when everybody said it was brilliant, and then it was, and then it died. Now you're starting to see technologies like that settle down. So you can start to see, for example, AR and VR used to train people in fighter jets to control manufacturing equipment sitting underground in Australian mines that suddenly cost a fortune to actually fix, or to man, or to drive, or to woman, or they drive. So you start to see the technology like AR and VR and mixed reality been employed in areas where it really can work. Some of the uses of AI, I think, and I'm ignoring generative AI just for the moment, are starting to really be revisited in a fantastic way. So some of the technologies I've seen over the last numbers of whiles are, you look at factories, and one of the things that stops factories working, scares people, is now there's more and more machinery. All of a sudden, people are getting injured. Now there's heavier packaging because people are buying more things, and those things need delivered more quickly. People need to work harder, and all of a sudden, you have muscular, skeletal injuries and whatever else. And I've seen some simple yet amazing technology where there's imaging cameras put into factory or shop floors, and they're watching the worker lift things. And what they're doing is providing feedback in real time on a computer screen to talk about, actually, you were trained to do it like this, so you didn't get injured. Now you've got into bad and sloppy habits. Here's how you can reassess. And people are using the technology to stop the person hurting themselves, intervening really early, and just teaching them how to lift correctly so they don't end up injured now or for the long term. I've seen forklift trucks being stopped and alarms going off as people inside of factories or walking across or about to get hurt by a truck. When again, you're thinking, my goodness, there's nothing more precious than a life. I'm starting to see vision technology and AR and VR starting to work on production lines so that the quality of the content that's coming out of the product, all of a sudden, if there is a problem, rather than allowing to continue and waste money and time and dollars, the production line is starting to be stopped. So now you're starting to see AI and mixed reality and artificial reality and virtual reality been used in really clean ways. Intelligent automation for me has always worked, but you're starting to see that ramp up a little bit more. And there's some wonderful vendors who are now starting to integrate LLMs into robotic process automation, intelligent automation. And what they're doing is, traditionally you would have had to do business process analysis. Now you're starting to record what people are actually doing on their screens. And the technology is working out the best way to do it, and using numbers and methods to all of a sudden to diagram and to flow it and to put metrics around it and suggest best ways. And if something changes in the process, it's automatically rebuilding the code. That's exciting. I've also seen technologies coming out from Amazon Code Whisper, for example. There's other derivatives. GitHub do the same thing. But all of a sudden, as a coder, and I warned coders in Belfast about this a year or two ago, folks, you're going to get replaced by AI and generative AI technologies. But if you think about it, there's lots of old code in the world. There's lots of things that we don't get time to do. If you do, and I'll use Code Whisper as the example, it can write code in 13 different languages. So if I want something written in C or Python or whatever else, I can ask it to do it. People have started to get really clever, and now you're able to draw on a board with a business user. What is it that they want? You hold the iPad or the laptop up in front of the screen. It looks at the flow diagram and automatically builds the code. The exciting bit is not just the code building, because that's automatically done for you, but it's building it in an ethical way. It's building it with security built in by default. It's automatically annotating the code, the things that nobody wants to do. It's all about automatically building a manual as well, so that the next developer who comes along has actually got a guide, so she can see, now I know what's happened and where it's gone wrong and what I need to change, something that, again, developers don't like to do. And testers will miss things because they're obviously human. But now you're starting to see the potential of the technologies to allow business people to do and achieve even more. You know, on top of that, of course, you're seeing the growth of the internet. Now that has become a staple. Nobody questions it. And you remember back in the day, in the year 2000, when everything crashed. Now the internet has settled down and we're now able to do just the most wonderful, amazing transactions that were impossible 10 years ago, all with predictive science put in behind it to allow us recommendations and everything else. So some of the stuff that I'm seeing that I'm excited about, the traditional stuff that's just immense now that people understand it. Some of the technologies that got a kicking, that all of a sudden now they've settled down beyond the hype curve and now people are using them for real and gorgeous and beautiful things, AR, VR, MR and everything else. Some of the technologies that have reinvented themselves to be even more efficient, intelligent automation, automated coding, automated business process mapping and diagramming, doing everything else. Now we're starting to see generative AI come on top of that. And this is the exciting thing about society, is technology drives so much change. And I love to see now that we're having the debates around ethics and risk and governance, that that's coming to the fore. So you're seeing this layer of existing technology settling down and expanding in function and use, a new set of technologies being repurposed on top, and even newer technology coming on top again to allow us to achieve even more. It will be, as I say, Mark, that's exciting from last year. This year, what will be truly exciting is when people start to combine all of those technologies together to allow them to create an exponential, productive, creative business like they've never been able to do before. And my basic philosophy is that technology won't replace roles. All boats rise in a floating tide. So the more people we can expose to all of these technologies and the more technology we can put into play in a really productive, creative way, the more businesses and the more people can benefit from all of this great technology. And I can't wait to see that.
That's a lot to unpack there. But the general theme I absolutely love of excitement, enthusiasm, and it's going to be a wonderful year. I can't wait to see all the different announcements happen as the year unfolds. Very curious to learn a little bit more about, you've got some speaking opportunities that you're going to be places this year. What's on the event calendar for you?
Yeah, the big thing is, I laugh, in the last 3 weeks, is three trips, three talks, three trips to London.
Okay.
I did one of my first talks in Ireland in years because I tend not to at the moment for some reason. Most of my talks are international or online. A lot of them have been around key themes, intelligent automation as ever. I'm an expert in that. AI and generative AI, because people are truly excited by that. And I've done talks for marketing, talks for HR, general business talks as to the state of the market and where things are going and how companies could get positioned. I've done a lot more on decision insight, which is, again, a Gartner trend from 2002, but it was been around a decade before that, which is using AI plus data analytics to allow organizations to make better decisions. All that I'm doing at the same time, sometimes overlapping, sometimes separate items. In addition, I'm also doing talks around, how do we actually get all these things to work? What are the key success factors that allow any technology and the key change management aspects that need to go in place to let people actually succeed? Because the technology's there and sometimes the actual methodology or the selling of the technology isn't as well. So that's coming through. Those are my main things at the moment. I've talk to do in Mauritius, a couple in London, one hopefully in Dubai, one hopefully in Kuala Lumpur. And those are the ones that I know about at the moment, but always open to doing a talk because I have tremendous fun doing that. And one in London, I forgot, I'm back there a couple of times in the next year as well, talking about generative AI and conversational AI as well. And I have one in Belfast. One online, one around technology and human resource management and how to make HR a lot more efficient, but how to actually put technology and all of the beautiful things that it can do into career paths and career maps to help professionals inside of businesses realize what technology can do by employing it in their everyday jobs. So lots of interesting talks that hopefully to goodness will allow people to come away inspired, come away a lot more knowledgeable, and hopefully come away a lot more enthused to do something about taking hold of all of these technologies and actually experimenting and doing something with it to make them and their lives that little bit easier and to make their farms that little bit more productive as well.
Amazing. I can't wait to see a live performance. Where can I find more information?
Yeah, big thing is, look, go to my website, kierangilmurray.com. Go to my YouTube. I want to grow that. Again, Kieran Gilmurray, search me there. I'm on Twitter, Kieran Gilmurray, same thing. I'm also on Buzzsprout or Spotify, Apple, any of my podcasts are there. And I spend far too much time on LinkedIn, writing thought leadership articles and engaging in the most amazing conversations with the best people across the world. So again, go to Twitter, my website, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Twitter, if you name it, I'm probably there communicating in some shape, form or other, or being part of a community and sharing whatever knowledge I have.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure that all the links are available in the show notes. Before we wrap up, I love to learn about what people are reading. Do you have any favorite books or books that you're leaning into right now?
Yeah, I have a very dangerous habit of spending far too much money on far too many books every month. And I think I must be Amazon's favorite customer in the entire world. What I am reading at the moment, because I'm very conscious of this, is The Coming Wave. It was a Sunday Times bestseller. And this talks about the ethical dilemmas and the joy of what is going to be a new AI age. That one's absolutely fantastic. I tend to read two or three books at the same time. So when I'm in the gym, it's my mobile phone and then playing with Kindle. And then when I'm at home, it's actually on my Kindle as well. And I'm reading another book, and I can't remember the title of it, Mark. It's 10X. It's very much not the 10X, as we know, the chap who wrote the book about selling things 10 times over.
This is human. 10X is easier than 2X?
10X is easier than 2X, which talks about human potential and about us removing all of the things that don't excite us or don't get us 10 times where we want to be today. That I'm on chapter 6 or 7, and it's probably the slowest I've gone through a book, but I'm writing so many things down and so many actions to take away. It's phenomenal. So my two things are the 10X versus 2X and anything AI ethics. And then far too many white papers on AI and business process change to be imagined. Oh, that's what sits on the iPad that I've got beside me at some stage of the day as well.
Nice.
Every day's a school day.
Yeah, if you love to learn, the topic of AI couldn't be more juicy of an appetite, right? There's just constantly new stuff coming out and so much to learn. I really appreciate you making some time to share what you've learned. One thing I wanted to add was with custom GPTs, I've started to experiment with, for books that I own, preloading a PDF and then like digging into the author's brain on any topic. And I found this, along with YouTube transcripts, to be a really great way to micro learn and have quizzing being brought back to me on how well I know the content on chapter 2 or 5. Or so I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about your ChatGPT's experience. And for those listening, their custom little, how would you describe them? Applications?
Yeah, it's, someone once said they are the same as the App Store. So what you're now able to do, instead of a very broad large language model like OpenAI's 3.5 or 4, which can basically answer a question on absolutely everything, what you're starting to see is more bespoke GPTs, or again, more bespoke LLMs. So in the next numbers of years, in the next numbers of decades, OpenAI themselves are launching their App Store or whatever we want to call it, GPT store. But I think you'll also see businesses and governments and industries narrowing down to create GPTs that have got the language or the content or more specific content around particular areas. So for example, you'll see legal LLMs, you'll start to see medical LLMs that will be infinitely trained in the language and the lexicon and the methods and the models of everything that specific industry related. So the large language models will still persist. You will see narrow LLMs that are more specific, and you'll see us playing with GPTs to allow us to do 1,001 different things. That'll be slightly more specialist again. Boy, this is the interesting thing, Mark. It's like drinking from the fire hydrant, all of the knowledge that's coming out and all of the changes in technologies coming out. That can be scary for people to know whether to begin with OpenAI, an industry-specific large language model, or a GPT. minus just download ChatGPT or play with Bing or Bard or Gemini on your phone. Get started somewhere and work your way through all of these different things till you find something that, in your instance, is massively productive. Having that shortcut guide, but lacking none of the knowledge on your desktop to allow you to consume genius content far quicker and far better. A brilliant use of ChatGPT. I'm not going to copy that.
It's information is for sharing, right? So that's the one thing that the best way to learn is to share and teach. So you have to go over the information at least twice. You learned it and then you also shared it. So now that's two points in time that maybe you'll hang on to some of this, right? Because it's flowing quickly. But
should share more. I see too many people hiding and coveting knowledge, believing that's what makes the world go round. But you and I are the same. All boats will rise on a floating tide. And the more people we can share with, the bigger the pie. Simple as that.
I look as examples at successful YouTubers. I'm constantly looking at them as like the very generous and giving. I come across videos of certain automations and things or things that have come out 9 months ago, and I'm watching it for the first time, but it's like an amazing little tool or something that makes me more productive. And the generosity there is always great to see. When people learn something, they share it, right? Yep.
You give, you get. That should be the mantra of the world. If you don't give, you should not get a darn thing in life.
Yeah. This has been a lot of fun, Kieran. I can't wait to do this again and learn what's changed, because certainly a lot will. So have a wonderful year and can't wait to follow your tour schedule and see when you're going to be in a city near me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And thanks to the audience for listening as well. What fun. That this is going to be the most fantastic year to date.
Absolutely.